Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. If you're rethinking your investment strategy, take a look at KPP Financial's Balanced Income Program. Steady yield for the risk averse. A strategy designed to accommodate investors who have a lower risk tolerance, but still desire some exposure to the potential growth of the stock market. To find out more, just click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com. End of commercial. And now, today's InvestTalk podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, September 12th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk. And the day after my birthday, so it's a new year for me, and it's been a I think it's the start of a new phase in the market as well. So we're going to talk about that. Now, above average investing for the average investor. That's what our motto is. That's what our driven goal is each and every weekday on InvestTalk. And, you know, investing is a process of discovery. It doesn't happen overnight, and it is a continuous effort. You have to continually discover new things, new data points, each and every day, each and every week, to stay on top of the market. Now, if you're at a point where you know all you need to know, well, you are in trouble. Because nobody that's successful in the market has ever fully grasped everything that they need to know. They're always continuing to learn. Now, InvestTalk is here to be your partner in that discovery, that daily discovery about the markets and how you should approach your investments. Now, discovering what type of stock investor you are is vital to your success. Are you about dividends? Deep value? Are you about growth names and exciting, fun companies to ride the wave of innovation on? What type of investor are you? Now, it's common for an investor who is risk-averse to purchase stocks that are above their risk tolerance, only to later sell them at a loss due to the fear that comes when volatility hits. Now, these investors later regret selling after they see the stock rebound because they're driven by their emotions. Now, once you can identify your own risk tolerance and then learn to become disciplined in investing within those parameters, it will greatly increase your chances of avoiding costly, irrational decisions. Okay? And there are three main categories investors fall under. Like I talked about before, growth-oriented. This is centered around stocks that are exciting. They have huge growth potential in both sales, earnings. They may be disrupting an industry, or at least the perception is that they're disrupting industry. Potential companies would include new IPOs or an industry such as biotech, technology. And there are higher risks to these types of companies. Why is that? Well, in biotech and technology, technology changes rapidly. Investors are more prone to becoming overly bullish about the prospects and it, you know, focusing on the story versus the actual numbers. And that it makes growth stocks prone to becoming overvalued. And then, you know, when the inevitable growth sputters, because it always does to some degree, even Apple, you know, their growth is sputtered because they're so large. Sometimes that gets to that point. But inevitably, you know, the stock tends to suffer when growth wanes. It doesn't have to even go negative. It just has to wane. And that's what makes the growth stocks so volatile and so risky, is because when that growth wanes, you can see big, big drops in the stock because suddenly investors start going back to the fundamentals, the cash flows, the earnings, and start pricing it at a more normal level. And then there's value-oriented investors. These investors look for mispriced stocks that have the potential to outperform once the market realizes how undervalued they are. And this has to do with a lot of fundamental research. It must be done to compare the previous performance with competitors and fully understand the industry and the company and why the company is underperforming or why the market doesn't seem to like it at this time, and what catalyst could push it back to proper valuation levels. This tends to be the style of more moderate risk investors, those that like to invest in these stocks and will invest in these positions for a long period of time. And a lot of times they have dividends. They don't necessarily have to be large, but they have some sort of a dividend. Okay. Then there's income oriented. And these are people that are just really primarily focused on income. The price appreciation from growth or the recovery from a deep value discount in price appreciation isn't really something that they're after. This is for people that are really just want that dividend. They tend to be more conservative investors, look for preservation of capital, invest in big blue chip names with high dividends and very consistent earnings history. Those would be good candidates for a portfolio, an income-oriented portfolio. Now, this investor also diversifies into maybe some investment-grade bonds to ensure stability and income as well. So those are kind of the three buckets that most people fall under. You might be a little shade of each or a mixture of all three. It's everyone's a little bit different. And that's where we help our clients is kind of hash out what type of strategy they think is best for them and their goals. And we help them figure out what those goals are, and then invest them accordingly. So what is your risk tolerance? What kind of investor are you? Now, you can try our free no-obligation risk assessment right there for free on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. Now, do you have a question about managing risk? You can check in right now or anytime with any money questions at all. 888-99-CHART is our number. We'll try to answer your question on the next InvestTalk.
Hey, I'm in the process of rebalancing my 401k portfolio. My question is, do I rebalance equally between the 9 mutual funds in which I own, or do I rebalance between the sectors? And the sectors that I have is large, mid, small cap, international, and a blended retirement date fund. Thank you, and I'll be listening on the internet. Have a nice night.
All right. This is a great question. And the reason it's a great question is because I don't have an answer for you. A lot of it depends on what type of investor you are. We go back to, you know, are you a growth investor? Are you an aggressive investor? Are you more moderate? Are you conservative? And we are actually in the midst of rolling out a new service for our clients, and our listeners will, if they request, could get an invitation as well. So what I'm going to tell you is send me a message, and anybody else out there who's having trouble managing their 401k, needs help figuring out their asset allocation, go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. Send me an email. Let me know that you're interested in this. We're just rolling this out. It is new. And I'll send you an invitation, and that will go a long way to helping you figure out what is the best allocation for your 401k, because everyone's different. And this service goes through a risk questionnaire, the same one we have on our website, gives you a risk score, 1 to 99, and then says, okay, based on your choices, here's your allocation that you should have. And you know, every 401k is a little bit different, and that's what the system does. It helps figure that all out and gives you that. So I'm really excited for it, and because I get a lot of callers like that. We get our own clients asking that question. We get callers calling in asking that question, and I'm sure there's thousands of listeners out there that are dumbfounded at what choices they have and how to allocate properly. And this is going to be an exceptional tool. So go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. It'll email go directly to me, and I will send you out an invitation. All right. Now let's try to answer a question sent in via text message. It says, hi, Steve and Justin. Love the show. I'm curious to what you think of Chesapeake Energy. CHK, the stock has been rising recently, but the company is going through a lot of restructuring. What do you guys think? Thanks a lot. Now, Chesapeake Energy, it's one of the largest natural gas drillers in the world. They do some oil too, but they're primarily focused on natural gas. They've had a huge rebound. You know, they're losing money in 2015. 2016, they're supposed to lose 22 cents. They have a large amount of debt, and they've been going through that crunch of what a lot of oil companies are going through. There's been a lot of bankruptcies in the oil patch, and Chesapeake, I think, was very close to that, and they started shedding assets, restructuring their company, and you know, stock has gone from under $2 a share back in February to $8 a share and $8.05 a share at the close today. I believe they did make another big find, discovery, that's also helping the stock as well, but I think a lot of that's priced in, and frankly, I think you probably missed most of it. Now, could it keep going? Sure. Could it get up to $10? I would say, yeah, that's possible. Let me see where the next big resistance level is. You're about to hit one here at about $8.60 or so. That's going to be big, big resistance. You're at $8.05 now. So I think it does have a little more upside. Then $10, a big number. And then I think $12.40 is really where you see that inflection point if it gets there. And oil prices, I think, are going to have to rebound well into the high 50s for Chesapeake to get up to that level. And I'm not convinced it's going to do that unless the dollar really weakens. And that's really what's going to have to happen, because you're still seeing the imbalances in the oil patch, and that's still going to have to work its way off. Like I said, the dollar's really going to have to weaken strongly for Chesapeake and a lot of the oil names to continue their advance. So I would say you've missed the vast majority of this move, and I'm not convinced that long term oil prices are going to stay high enough for Chesapeake to really survive. And don't expect that dividend to stay intact either if they're having bankruptcy issues as well. So very high risk name, high reward as well, but very high risk. Now, each month, Steve sets aside time to review retirement portfolios on Skype and telephone with listeners, and even via, I think he did one last week via FaceTime as well. So he does with listeners all over the country. He plans some face-to-face meetings in the Bay Area pretty regularly as well. He'll be in San Francisco on September 20th. That's just 8 days away. He hasn't been there in a while, so if you are in that area, you can sit down with him. San Ramon on September 27th and San Jose on September 28th. So he's going to be all over Northern California later this month. To schedule an hour with Steve, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
Hi, this is Phil from Oklahoma City. I listen to your program podcast, and I'd like your opinion of GE, General Electric. Thanks.
I was looking at GE. I think most people know what GE it does. Most people, I don't think, knew how big GE, their financing arm was back in before the financial crisis, and they took a large hit, and they've restructured since then, sold off a lot of their financing assets, and made the company, I think, a lot safer overall. But GE Capital arm is still a decent size of their business, and they're very cyclical. So, you know, is GE a great company? Yeah, I think overall on the industrial side, they're very successful. Very good company, I think, to have on your watch list. But I am not a buyer of it, especially at these levels. I think it's overvalued. And I think we're probably going to be entering a recession the next 12 to 18 months. And GE is going to be hit accordingly. And technically, you know, it looks fairly bearish. Huge breakdown on Friday. Rebound a little bit today, but nowhere near where it was in the close on Thursday. It's trading right around its 200-day moving average. I'm just not a fan of GE at these levels. Great company to have on your watch list, but not at these levels and not at the, I would say, the end of our economic cycle. So keep on your watch list. Don't buy it today. Now, one reason to sign up for our free InvestTalk Insider program is the webinars. We record our live webinars and make them available to our listeners so you can go back in time and watch them anytime. Like breaking the risk barrier, measuring and managing investment risk. Again, being an InvestTalk Insider is free, but you have to sign up. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab. We're gonna talk about a few things on today's show. The first is structured products. Have you ever been pitched one? Do you know what they are? Do you know what the risks are? We're going to discuss that. Then we're going to talk about the 35-year, the end to the 35-year party in the bond market for bond bulls. Is the party over? Are we at an inflection point? There's a new report from the analyst, and I would kind of agree with him. Usually I don't agree with these big bank analysts, but this one I do. Then four common banking habits of millennials. I think this is important to talk about because the global banking landscape is changing, and the way people interact with banks is much, much different today than it has been in the past. So we're going to touch on those trends that maybe the older generation isn't doing some of these things, but the younger generation is. And guess what? If they're doing it today, they're going to be doing it 10, 15, 20 years from now, and if not all today, much, much more. And then climbing the five rungs of the ladder to financial success. What are those five rungs? What do you need to check off to make sure you are financially successful? So we're going to talk about all of those things today. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's take a quick look at the market today. We had a big rebound after the Dow plunged 400 points on Friday. The Dow was up 240 points today, so got back a lot of it, but not all of it. The S&P was up about 30. I think it was down 60-something points on Friday. NASDAQ was up 86. So we whipsaw, and this is really after Bernard, I'm trying to remember how to pronounce her name. She's one of the Fed presidents. And today was the last day for the Fed speakers, the Fed members, to come out and speak publicly. There's a blackout period after today between now and the Federal Reserve meeting next week. And this is the last kind of chance for them to tell the market, I know you don't think we're raising in September, but we want to raise. And that's what you kind of heard late last week. And I think a lot of people were expecting, okay, they have one more shot. You know, the odds of a September hike, even though they raised the odds late last week with their commentary, the market still wasn't pricing that in. Completely. I think it was only at about 30% odds, 40% odds that they'll raise in September. Well, if you look back in history, the market, they've only raised twice ever where the odds in the market weren't over 70%. So unless those odds are over 70%, the market hasn't priced that in yet. And so this was their last ditch chance to say, hey, guess what? We want to raise in September. And they didn't do that. So it's going to be very interesting. There's some Fed speakers that it sounds like they really want to go, and there's others that are just like, no, we're not ready yet. And they're just talking out of both sides of their mouth. So, I mean, I think you could see a September surprise, to be honest with you. I really don't know. It's totally up in the air, and there's zero clarity. And I think that's a huge mistake by the central bank for not giving the market more clarity. Now let's turn on to one of our text questions. It says, hey, Steve and Justin, I'm currently up on Potash after getting in a few weeks ago and was wondering if you would think I should just take profits, or is that possible? This possible merger worth the risk of holding through, hoping for good news? Now, we own Potash for our managed accounts. We bought it in the 16 range. It's now at 1676, so we're up a little bit. It did hit about 18 just a few days ago, after the potential merger between Agrium and Potash, and now we came out with the news, and the market wasn't that excited about it. Merger of equals, they're calling it. I still like the space. I like to see how this whole merger thing works out. The valuations are still strong. They're going to combine into one entity. I think there's going to be a lot of good synergies and positive for them overall as a company, Agrium and Potash, which we own both for managed accounts. So I like both names. If your time horizon is only short term, maybe there's probably not a whole lot of upside in the near term, but long term, I still like Potash, still like Agrium, still like the ag space overall. It's one of the rare good value areas of the market at this time. All right, now let's talk a little bit about structured products. These are vehicles that you don't hear about a lot, I don't think. And if you've seen the movie The Big Short, you'll know that their structured products are not a rare thing. They're out there. There's a lot of them. Now, they're out there less so today than they were back in before the financial crisis, when global regulators were more lax on allowing these structured products to exist. But what structured products are, they're prepackaged investment strategies. Some are based on options, commodities, currencies, a basket of securities, indexes, among many other things. Some products have different conditions, different functions. There's no uniform, single set of standards for these packages. They can be structured a million different ways. So we're going to talk about this after the break. Are these good? What should you do if someone from a big bank calls you up? And what are the risks involved as well? All right. Now we're halfway through our hour together. We're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. Call and get through right now.
In case we haven't mentioned it, KPP Financial serves clients all across the U.S. If you'd like to have Steve review your retirement portfolio personally, Steve carves out a few hours each month to meet with our podcast subscribers on Skype or telephone. It can be a very rewarding hour. To set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review. You're listening to Invest Talk for this Monday, September 12th. When the stock market looks scary and bonds are stingy, many investors looking for something different come across real estate investment trusts. But then the options can be confusing. Getting REITs right. That's next time. But what's on your mind right now? 888-99-CHART is how to reach us with your question from anywhere in the U.S.
Hello, Steve. Name's Chris, Salt Lake City area. I've called in before, and appreciate the advice you give. Been listening to you on podcast. My question is, U.S. Treasuries, where and how do they fit into a portfolio? And on the U.S. Treasuries, would I want to go mutual funds such as Vanguard's VIPSX, or would I want to buy the different types and stuff individually to get a better security on them? Would you also please discuss tips as far as not necessarily what they are, but when they're to be used, under what circumstances, if it's at retirement or if it is things are building up? Thank you very much.
All right, that's a great question. Where do treasuries fit into a portfolio? Well, obviously they are a very conservative investment choice. The principal amount is guaranteed by the government. You still have the interest rate risk if interest rates rise. And that's why I would say if you can buy treasuries directly as opposed to buying a fund, I would go and do that. And the reason is because as interest rates rise, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, but as interest rates rise, you're going to have losses in a bond portfolio, okay? In a portfolio of bonds, and if you're buying a mutual fund, you're owning a portfolio of bonds, and VIPSX is a Vanguard Inflation Protection Securities, and they own all TIPS bonds, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. And you know, that's an okay way if you don't have a lot of money, but if you can buy the bonds directly, that's what we do with our income balanced income portfolio. We don't buy treasuries, we buy individual bonds and we collect the interest, and the client collects the interest and the bond matures, and you don't have any loss of principal like you might if the interest rates rise dramatically and you're in a bond fund. Well, consistently they're buying new bonds and there's no maturity date on them, right? So I like to buy individual bonds, and it's a very conservative part of your portfolio, and that can be small, it can be very large. It just depends on what type of portfolio you want to build. And you need to probably have some piece of software like we do as professionals to kind of fit that into the mix. And then when it comes to TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, like he asked about, the good time for that is obviously when you see inflation starting to pick up. Today, I'm not seeing that. I don't think TIPS are a great idea today. I'd rather own actual treasuries, and honestly, both I don't like. I don't like either treasuries or TIPS, but that's kind of how they fit into a portfolio. So I hope that helped. All right, now structured products. Talked about that a little bit earlier. What are the risks of structured products? Why you should reconsider them? And we talked a little bit earlier about these are prepackaged investment vehicles based on all types of different assets. They can be written up and they're just contracts is really what they are. And they're issued usually by large banks. And what are the risks involved? Well, first there's issuer default risk. Structured products are not regulated by centralized parties. This means that one part of the trade can default on any of its obligations. It could be the bank, it could be the counterparty to any derivatives that are in that particular strategy. Whatever it is, the issuer of the product can become insolvent. They can go bankrupt. So this is why investors should pay close attention to the financial strength and also the reliability of a structured product's issuer. Okay, so if, for example, if you owned a structured product issued by Lehman Brothers back in the day, and they went default, you became a debt holder to Lehman Brothers. Okay. Structured products also do not have margin collateral. I mean, there's nothing put up to make sure this product is strong. So in case of a bankruptcy, investors can lose all their money. There's no assets backing the particular structured product. It's just the strength of the institution that is issuing it. You know, there's a lot of bonds that it might be backed by a particular infrastructure project, like a toll road, right? Or maybe leasing equipment. It might be backed by, and if you go bankrupt, you can at least sell the equipment, right? So it's not backed by anything. There's also an expiration date, and after those dates, the issues become worthless. So make sure you understand that as well. Foreign currency fluctuations, just like a lot of all foreign investments, that can be a risk as well. So what are you investing in? Then liquidity risk. Can you buy and sell it? Odds are no. You're probably locked in. And if you do want to sell it, it's going to be an expensive thing to sell. There's complex payout structures, so it might look like you're getting good income from it, and most likely you will, but there's risks that certain market fluctuations can happen, and you no longer get that income from it. Then there's the market risk, the underlying market risk. Now, there might be a maximum you could lose, but there also could be just a small buffer. It's just how they're written out. They're a lot like annuities. Okay, because it's all in the language in the contract. So if you get pitched a structured product, make sure you understand the risks, and not only that, but understand who's selling them to you. The people that sell these products are getting a commission, a large commission. So understand their motivation. It may fit you, but odds are it won't. So be very skeptical of these products because they're sold a lot by the big banks, and you might think they're super safe, but hey, Lehman Brothers was a AAA rated company and they went bankrupt, and all the structured products and related to them had issues as well. So understand all of that. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. We have about 15 minutes left in the show. So if you're going to call in, do it sooner rather than later. Now, tops on our list of priorities is your call. Bring your questions to us at any time at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my question is that I acquired Prudential stock. The ticker is PRU. And I'm just curious what you think of that. I've got like 90 shares. Should I sell it?
I'm 45 years old, not a homeowner, and just curious on how you would feel about that in regards to taxes, would I get dinged on, and so forth. Thank you.
Well, you required it, but you know, you're asking about taxes. I don't know your tax situation because where did you buy it? What's your cost basis on it? Is it held in an IRA or is it a traditional brokerage account? So I can't give you any sense of the tax ramifications until I know more details. But Prudential is yields about 3.5%, one of the largest life insurance companies in the world. I'm not a fan of it. I really am not. I think they're a complex beast. Interest rates are very low, which is very hard for insurance companies to make a lot of money. They're highly regulated. They're leveraged to the market overall because of what they do. Now they're very broad based and diversified from a regional standpoint, but I just don't like. I don't like the sector overall, to be frank. Now, is it cheap? You know, it's relatively cheap, and it yields about 3.5%. But honestly, I just don't. I don't like the space. I just don't. So, I would try to sell it. I would. I don't know what your whole portfolio is. It only looks like you have about maybe $7,000 in it. But is that a large part of your portfolio? A small part of your portfolio? That's something to consider as well. So, I would be looking to get out of Prudential. Now, Invest Talk Personal, the day-to-day money decisions we make that can impact our financial lives for years to come. The road to retirement, there's steps that need to be taken, right? Step one is define your retirement. So how would you like to spend retirement? The best thing to do is to write down your retirement wish list. Where do you want to live? Do you want to travel? Who do you want to spend time with? What kind of hobbies are you going to have? And each of those choices have some sort of price tag associated with them. Be specific. Write it down. Not just where, but how often. Are you going to do some volunteering? Write down that exactly. So, list your top goals, maybe five of them. Just how do you see your life in retirement? Now, you have to be practical. You know, you do have to work in the realm of reality. Obviously, flying a private jet around the world is not realistic for most people. But the more precise you are, the more your real life, your plan will be. Right? The idea is to stay focused on a manageable set of goals that are attainable based on your financial picture. Okay, so maybe you haven't thought about that much, but now's a good time to start. It's never too early. Start by outlining how you envision enjoying retirement. Now you make this first step because if you entertain these ideas as you work towards retirement, chances are you're going to be that much more determined to make your retirement dreams come true. It takes a kind of focus and discipline to get there. And you know, we see this all the time is everybody has different goals. I talked to a woman today who, you look at her nest egg, it isn't giant, but she was very honest, and she said, you know, I don't have a lot of wants. I just want to live my life and don't have huge expenses, and I want to retire. And based on what she had and her spending habits, she could retire. Now, Steve's met with, and we've met with plenty of people who have much bigger goals. Me, one woman that I can remember, she thinks she had 3 or 4 horses, and she wanted to keep those horses for retirement. Well, guess what? Keeping horses costs tens of thousands of dollars a year, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. That's a very, very large expense that you have to maintain. So you have to have a much larger nest egg for that. So everyone's situation is a little bit different, okay? So step two, measure your assets. And we'll get to that next time on Invest Talk Personal. How do you do that? We're going to talk about that on the next show. Now, maybe you have some experience to share. Please get through to us at 888-99-CHART. You can also send me a note that will come directly to me. Just click on the Contact Steve or Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
Getting ready to make some important decisions about your home? Well, now you have a source of helpful ideas from our own licensed realtor, Justin Klein. To get a note to him, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin. He'll get right back to you.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 10 minutes left in the show, so give us a call. Nick in Hayward asking about my favorite company. Go for it. Nick, you there? Nick. Is Nick gone? All right. Okay. Well, my producers are going to try to get Nick back on the line. He's asking about Gilead. So if we can get him back on, we'll go to him. But let's talk about a new report from the analyst from Deutsche Bank. It says the global economy is at an inflection point. And what he's saying is that the 35-year party in the bond market, bull market, is over. And we are at that inflection point. 3.5 decades that started in 1980 to the present day. That era is coming to an end, which means economically, politically, policy-wise, asset trends that accompanied that move of interest rates in the high teens into, you know, basically zero in a lot of cases, it's coming to an end. We're at the end of what central banks can do. So people that are going to extrapolate the last 35 years going forward are sadly mistaken. And it's one of the most dangerous things anybody can do. Because the next 35 years is going to look very different than the last 35 years. So if you think that housing prices are going to quintuple, and that's probably a conservative number, from, you know, 30 years, if you think that's going to happen again, you're sadly mistaken. Now, do I think real estate prices will be higher 30 years now than they are today? Yeah. But if it's double, I might be a little shocked. Say that. And I've been talking about this for a few years now. Interest rates, mortgage rates going from the high teens into the low threes, which they are at today, is a magnificent, gigantic, enormous tailwind to real estate prices. Anything debt-driven, it's going to be a giant tailwind to prices. Now, we are now approaching an era that is the exact opposite. Interest rates will be rising now. How much? I don't know, but we're now facing an era where it's going to be a headwind to real estate prices and to asset prices generally. So understand that we are in a new era, and don't go looking back the last 30 years and think that's what's going to happen going forward. It's going to be very different. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Roy. I'm calling from Escondido. My question is about annuities and life insurance policies. Can a life insurance policy be closed out and rolled over into an annuity, which would cover long-term care? Answer on there if that's possible. Thanks for taking the minute. Bye.
I think that's possible. A lot of that depends on the language in the contract. We talk about this all the time, is that annuities, life insurance policies, they're just contracts. So what you can and can't do with them depends on what says in the contract. And they're all different. Usually within the same insurance company, you can probably do that. I don't see that being an issue, because they just want to keep your money in that in their, you know, on their balance sheet, basically. So you got to call your insurance company and find out if that's a possibility. I don't know. It depends on the language in the contract. There might be a cost to that. I wish I could give you more information, but I can't. Now let's talk about four common banking habits of millennials. Now, millennials generally are understood to be people that are born after the early 1980s. And this group significantly outnumbers baby boomers as of this year. And they do some they have very different habits than baby boomers and older generations. And the reason is because they're the first generation to be born in an almost entirely digital age. So it's no surprise that this group performs most of its banking functions online. Now, millennials are close to 2 times more likely to perform basic banking actions through digital channel than any other age bracket. Approximately 80% of millennials check their account balance online, 65% conduct internal fund transfers online, 76% monitor activity for fraudulent activities through a wireless channel, and most of this is done over mobile devices. And then millennials have also embraced the non-traditional banking models. Approximately 32% of millennials are highly likely to utilize mobile wallet services like Google Wallet or Apple Pay. And this is that's about double those 35 and older. Okay. And 56% of millennials between the ages of 18 and 24 indicate that they're either currently using alternative payment services or likely to begin using them within 12 months. So the majority of younger people. So this is really the trend. They're also more likely to use peer-to-peer lending services. And my favorite tool is Venmo, which is owned by PayPal. And this is a free tool as long as you link it to your bank account. And you can send your money from one Venmo account to another, and you get the money and you deposit in your bank account the next day. All digitally, don't have to do anything else. You just find somebody whose account it looks at your phone numbers in your address book, and it knows who's on Venmo that you know, and transfers it easily. And this is really the future. And I think that Apple will eventually get to this. They need to. They should. If they want Apple Pay to take off, they need to have a Venmo-like service. It's that simple. There's no reason why they shouldn't. They have the technology to do it. They have the user base to do it. And I think they eventually will do it. Okay. So millennials really take control of their finances through online behaviors. And this is really where the future is going. Okay. 50% of millennials use banks online connect to their bank online. They don't go into the branches. And that's why you're seeing branches slowly and slowly disappear. So the whole banking model is changing. And I think regulators are kind of behind the eight ball of understanding what's going on from a safety standpoint and a compliance standpoint. But this is another factor that is going to shrink the commercial real estate market dramatically over time, along with online shopping, etc. Everything's going online. And so I think in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see a major disruption in the commercial real estate space that's going to cause a lot of defaults and a restructuring of how our cities in this country look. Now, our time is up. Remember, your questions help keep us on track, addressing money issues you want to talk about. And you can ask them anytime, day or night, using our 24-hour listener line. We'll get to your question on the next Invest Talk. So we're out of time. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis.